Welcome back to episode 63 of A People's Guide to Publishing. And this week, we are going to talk about some more weird legal things that you should probably know as a book publisher. I am your host, Joe Beal, the autistic publisher, author of A People's Guide to Publishing the Book, and founder and CEO of Microcosm.
And I'm Ellie Blue, the editorial and marketing director of Microcosm. Publishing on my own for about 5 years before I joined Microcosm.
You were? Oh, mm-hmm. Great.
And,
that was probably one of the qualifications I saw in you at that
time.
So,
as I started to get involved in Microcosm, I started learning some facts that really surprised me, some laws that we had to follow that I didn't know, because I just assumed that, like, capitalism is the Wild West and you can do whatever you want.
Which is kind of true, honestly.
But there are some important exceptions.
That's true, unfortunately.
So last week we talked about the Robertson-Pittman Act, which is good,
except it's Robertson-Pattman.
Robertson-Pattman. I haven't had enough tea this morning, y'all. We talked about the Robertson-Pattman Act last week, which is about fair competition. You can't offer preferential terms to different customers in the same category as other customers that aren't getting those terms.
And if you fell asleep during that one or didn't watch it or whatever, you can watch this one just fine without impediment. Yeah.
And this one we're going to talk about more things you basically can't do. Okay, so the first time I went to a publishing conference, I was pretty surprised because in the program prominently and then like in reminders and announcements throughout the day, they were like, you are not allowed to talk about book prices. And I was like, what? That doesn't make any sense. Why not? Wouldn't that be kind of actually an important thing to talk about? What, can you explain why are we not allowed to talk about book prices at publishing conferences?
Because it's collusion.
Tell me more.
So, essentially, what happened, and you know, again, all these things are speculative and interpretive, but the reason that is a sensitive topic is because publishers, and you could find it on Google should this topic fascinate you, colluded to fix prices around 2012. So around the time that the pervasive fear was that ebooks would eclipse print in terms of book sales, publishers, let's be more specific, Big Five publishers panicked. And the way that they dealt with their panic, they colluded with Apple against Amazon.
And when you say, like, colluded and had meetings, like, what does that mean, literally? Like, what were the discussions and what did they decide to do?
So they said, we are not going to give Amazon the pricing that they want. Mm-hmm. We are not going to give them the terms that they want. Mm-hmm. And we would recommend that you also not give them. You know, it became a price fixing scandal. So if you Google, you know, publishing price fixing Amazon lawsuit, you'll probably find lots of remnants of that in the aftermath of that. There were incidents where, you know, Hachette in particular, you know, the average price of their paper or of their hardcover books, you know, the new books that would come out from them would be $26-$27 hardcovers. And so the major rub is that Amazon had done the math and said, if you make your ebooks $9.99, you will sell more than twice as many as you would at the prices you were selling them for now, which was $14.99. And Hachette said, no, we don't want to do that. We want to prioritize the paper format because, you know, we don't want to cannibalize our hardcover sales to sell twice as many ebooks because that ultimately isn't as good and we have all this infrastructure and we have, you know, 100 years of history of doing this well. And, you know, and this was sort of the war because Amazon was, we now know, unable to make a profit from selling paper books. And they knew, well, this is my conjecture, interpretation, they believed that the only way for them to become a profitable company was to have ebooks totally cannibalize and eclipse print, which they have failed to do, and then that sort of destroyed the plans for, you know, selling the Kindle readers as a loss leader and all of their various plans for taking over the publishing industry in yet another way. Popular narrative, as far as we know from the lawsuits filed, is that Amazon was powerful and large enough to basically take a solid bite out of the five largest publishers in the world, which is a little bit terrifying since those publishers represent almost half of book sales in the industry at that time. The reality is that Amazon is smarter than, and just a little more forward-thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, the only real comparison is like how the electric scooter companies were able to like stomp all over local municipality governments because they just were better at being weasels.
So this would be like community organizing if like a bunch of tenants were getting together to agree to not pay rent, and that would be like very admirable, right? Yeah.
But they're trying to protect, once again, fair competition. But it's backwards in this case because everything about Amazon is unfair. So the publishers were trying to solve that by working together. Whereas...
Right, and whereas if they'd done that and been like... It would be easier to wrap your head around, I feel like, if all the publishers got together and they were like, we're going to take those independent bookstores... for all they're worth, we're going to offer them worse terms.
And that is what happened in 1988, literally.
Got it. But instead, then when they tried to do it with Amazon, Amazon actually has the legal power to resolve that quickly, unlike the independent bookstores.
This is, I believe, what has led to them withdrawing now from books, because they just couldn't destroy all of their competitors in the way they had set out to.
So, when we're talking about collusion and price fixing, help me connect the dots here between, like, why we can't sit down at a conference with some other publishers and be like, oh yeah, we're gonna start making our hardcovers $21.95. I mean, it's more than that now. I'm still living in the 90s. We're gonna start making our hardcovers $49.95 instead. Like, why?
$49.95. Right.
We have $60 hardcovers
because,
here.
So this is the thing. Like, competition only works... if there isn't collusion. So imagine what would happen to you as the consumer. You know, mind you, this is, these major houses represent 50% of books sold at this time. So imagine what would happen if they did all decide to take their hardcover prices from $26 to $49.99.
Right.
What would you do? You would either not buy books, or your book would suddenly cost you $50.
Right.
And what are you going to do?
That makes sense.
It's a terrible proposition. You know, it's, so these are ultimately supposed to be consumer protection laws, and Amazon just found a very weaselly way of interpreting it to their favor.
So when people frequently do call for, say, boycotts of different companies, and as publishers, if we were to, like, join in that or, like, retweet a tweet or tweet our own tweet saying, like, you should boycott X company... would that be collusion?
We still believe in, like, a lot of these Adam Smith principles as a country, and that's sort of what informs our laws. So you don't have to do business with somebody.
Right.
And you don't have to agree to predatory terms, and you don't have to... You know, most of those kind of things are opt-in. Mm-hmm. However, if all of the publishers organized to say, these are the only terms we would accept from Amazon, that would be collusion, similarly.
What if we were to, like, privately talk to a different publisher and be like, hey, you don't have to accept these terms from Amazon, these are our terms, this is, yeah, like...
Well, Amazon solves that problem by making all that information privatized and non-disclosured, so you literally can't tell somebody now what your terms are.
That's good, they're protecting us against potential lawsuits from them.
And so, whereas you can normally share information freely, you know, you could normally say, like, this is, well, in fact, it's normally published, where you say, these are the discounts we offer.
Most recent publishing conference, one of their rules was not just don't talk about prices, but don't talk about boycotting other entities in the publishing business. So that's a little bit troubling, because I think we do at times, like, you know, someone will be like, let's all boycott Amazon on this day to support the striking workers, and we'll, like, retweet that tweet. Could that be interpreted as collusion?
It can, but more likely that's going to be interpreted as us encouraging consumers to join a boycott. You know, it's, the law is very weird with this stuff, that if you're a nonprofit, you can't recommend a political candidate, but if you're a nonprofit, you can tell the entire world not to shop at Amazon.
Yeah, that is funny.
Whereas if you're a corporation, you can essentially tell people to do whatever you want and then just suffer the consequences of what people think of your actions.
That's reassuring. So I guess we couldn't get together with a bunch of other publishers and be like, let's organize.
Yeah, you couldn't collude with other publishers to say, on this day, we will all cease renewing our contract with Amazon. Like, that would be collusion, just like what the major publishers did 10 years ago with their prices. But, you know, again, much of these things are a lot more nuanced. So usually when a publisher would say something along the lines of boycott Amazon, what people are going to hear is you shouldn't spend your dollar at Amazon. And still, though, I feel like it's way more tasteful to say things along the lines of, like, here are some things to think about how your money would affect other things downwind when you do shop at Amazon. And, you know, I just feel like that's in better taste.
Not your way to tell people what they should or shouldn't do.
Right.
Which is good. It keeps you out of legal trouble.
And I'm writing this book right now about, like, what is motivating behavior. And honestly, I can tell you straightforwardly that telling other people what they should do only really bolsters your in-group to make them feel like you are definitely a part of the in-group. It does not motivate behavior of people outside your group. It actually only hardens them to go against your behavior and to further say, oh, those people, they don't have respect for disabled people, or they don't have respect for the reasons that I need to shop at Amazon because they are exalting their privilege.
But I want to say I'm not just virtue signaling when I'm telling you, don't collude, don't price fix. Going
to
be bad.
Actually, I don't know if we can tell people not to collude or price fix. That would be collusion.
Okay, forget I said anything, because that... Yeah, okay, don't even talk about collusion. Like us. Like, we are taking this risk so you don't have to.
I am your host, Joe Beal, the autistic publisher, author of A People's Guide to Publishing.
And I'm Ellie Blue. I'm not a lawyer. Don't take this as legal advice.
And we would never tell you what to do.
We would love to tell you some consequences of potential actions.
Thanks for joining us once again.
Please send your questions to podcast@microcosmpublishing.com so we can answer them on future episodes.
And please give us 5 stars on iTunes and everywhere else that podcasts are reviewed.
You can find us on the internet at microcosm.pub.
On Twitter at microcosm.
On Facebook at microcosm publishing.
On Instagram at microcosm_pub.
And here in Portland, Oregon on North Williams Avenue.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful week.